Many, many very noisy protesters outside the Oxford Farming Conference last week. What did the DEFRA secretary have to say? Hard to tell at times.
Sounds like we've got some trouble on the next slide. We have now two musicians. I know the harmony and timing can be improved, but the message is quite clear.
We'll hear more clearly from Steve Reed about Labour's New Deal for farming and what's the problem with neonicotinoids. Should they be banned, as is being suggested?
We've also got to look at the alternatives, because banning them completely, we still will get aphids coming in carrying the virus. The alternative to using the treatment is an insecticide, an overall insecticide spray.
And how do we take soya to sustainability?
The focus of the project is reducing carbon emissions in agriculture. Specifically, the NCS project's focus is how we can use homegrown proteins, bioproteins, beans, peas, and other pulses such as lupins even, to replace fully or partially replace soybean meal in livestock rations.
We'll also check the markets and get the weather for the week ahead.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Good morning, I'm Steve Orchard. Hope you're not too cold. Plenty of layers on, and that's just me in the studio. Last week saw the first farming conference of the year, Oxford 2025. Many protesters beeping their tractor horns outside and DEFRA Secretary Steve Reed inside. One didn't quite drown out the other, mainly because the conference hall was on the other side of the building, but we in the press room heard them loud and clear, especially when he was leaving. What did Steve Reed have to announce this year? Well, other than reiterating their perceived need for changes to agricultural property relief due to the financial black hole, and that the changes already announced will go ahead, well, he started by recognising the main problem facing farming businesses.
If we are serious that food security is national security, then farming must be recognised and treated as a serious business that needs and deserves to turn a decent profit. Right now, too many farmers don't make enough money for the food they produce. People feel we're becoming too reliant on imports. Climate change and external shocks will keep challenging the sector. We're offering a new deal for farmers to help address this together.
So what's the deal?
Our farming roadmap will be the most forward-looking plan for farming in our country's history. The blueprint that will make farming and food production sustainable and profitable for the decades to come. It will be built on our vision for the future of the farming sector, a vision that depends on three strands. First, a farming sector that has food production at its core. Second, a sector where farm businesses can diversify their income to make a fair profit and remain viable even in the most challenging of times. Third, a sector that recognises that restoring nature is not in competition with sustainable food production, but is essential to it. It's only through pursuing all three that we will achieve long-term food security, and that must be our destination.
Innovation was mentioned, including the confirmed launch of the Adopt programme this spring.
It will fund farmer-led trials to bridge the gap between new technologies and their real-world application. Some of those who work with us to develop Adopt are here today. And I say to those people, your input is invaluable and a testament to what can be achieved through genuine co-design. Precision breeding offers huge potential to transform the plant breeding sector in England, enabling innovative products to be commercialised in years instead of taking decades. I can confirm today we will introduce secondary legislation to Parliament by the end of March, unlocking new precision breeding technology that will allow farmers to grow crops that are more nutritious, resistant to pests and disease, resilient to climate change, and that benefit the environment. Thank you.
We'll be talking more about the Adopt Fund on next week's farming programme. And another strand of the New Deal was the need for farmers to diversify, because I heard someone say they can't make a profit from growing food.
Food production will always be the primary purpose of the farming sector. But for all farm businesses, tenants, uplands and others, to stay viable in an increasingly uncertain world and to make sure they can keep producing the food we all need, they must be able to profit from other activities. And this is the second strand of our vision. We will introduce reforms to support all farmers to innovate and diversify their businesses, building business resilience so they can plan for the future, even if there's a bad harvest or a disease outbreak.
Pretty much every time I speak to the CLA and others, the conversation comes round to planning, delays, difficulties, rules that are too complex.
In the spring, we will consult on national planning reforms to make it quicker for farmers to build farm buildings, barns, and other infrastructure they need to boost food production. And we will shortly begin a series of planning roundtables with the sector. Planning rules have got in the way for too long. We will speed up the system so you can grow and diversify your farm business.
And finally for now, flooding.
Our new Floods Resilience Task Force will ensure better coordination between government and frontline agencies, and we're reviewing the existing flood funding formula to speed up new flood schemes and make sure funding goes where it's needed the most.
Should you wish to hear it, the complete speech is available online and the text is on the DEFRA website. Words, Mr. Secretary, are easy. We'll see how the actions pan out over the coming months. Watch this space, and there'll be more reports from the Oxford Farming Conference next week and in the coming weeks on the farming programme. Last week I mentioned the ban being sought by DEFRA of neonicotinoids, the insecticide often used to treat sugar beet seed. Not surprisingly, this is opposed by NFU Sugar. Surprisingly, they wouldn't be interviewed about it. So straight to the horse's mouth, he's been called much worse, to get the thoughts of Lincolnshire beet grower Andrew Ward. Morning, Andrew.
Hello, Steve. Yeah, morning to you. A nice cold one here in Lincolnshire.
Yeah, very much so. And a happy new year to you and yours.
And you.
Let's talk neonicotinoids, following announcements and press releases and things like that recently. Can we just take it back a step and break it down a little bit? For those who don't know, who aren't involved in this aspect of arable, what are neonicotinoids?
Well, they are a type of seed treatment that used to be on oilseed rape all the time, and it was banned in this country probably 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago now, something like that. But the reason it was banned was because a lot of the pressure groups said that they cause damage to insects, or some insects, but especially bee populations, and they can decimate bee populations. This has been disputed by numerous people, and even beekeepers say no, it's not that, and they've said it doesn't cause any damage. And actually, the loss of oilseed rape in particular, the area has reduced massively because we now can't control cabbage stem flea beetle. And so, in fact, banning neonicotinoid seed treatments, because the oilseed rape area has plummeted, we have actually caused the bee population damage, because we've a flowering crop now that used to be something like 750,000 hectares, there's now less than 300,000 hectares.
You're talking there about a flowering crop, and of course what we're talking about here is particularly sugar, which isn't a flowering crop.
So bees don't go in sugar beet, so therefore why can we not still have it? So what happened was, they then said, right, let's look at this on a yearly basis. So if you think you need them, and this was DEFRA saying this, then the NFU would put in an emergency authorisation request to use it in the years when we think we're going to have virus yellows. Now in sugar beet, the damage is caused by aphids or green fly carrying the virus yellows virus. And so the neonicotinoid actually controlled those aphids and it protected the sugar beet crop. But in years when it's a harsh winter and you get a lot of frost, the aphids are controlled by the weather. So you go into the spring with less aphids and less problems. So it's those years where the seed treatment wasn't granted. But if it's a warmer, milder winter, then there's more aphids going to be about, which will damage the sugar beet crop. And so that authorisation is given.
OK, now the concern about neonics and flowering crops and so on, I think, was that if you're spraying, then it could spread on to other flowering crops and affect the bee population. But this is seed treatment we're talking about, isn't it? Not spraying.
Absolutely, Steve. It's a seed treatment that is a coating around the seed. It's in the soil. It's buried in the soil. So as the plant germinates, it's got this insecticide in the plant. So it's protecting the plant from a very, very early age. So it's a seed treatment around the seed.
Okay. Now, there's been announcements recently that effectively DEFRA are looking at either banning all neonicotinoids or possibly simply having a list of unavailable products.
Exactly, they are. And I think the problem we've got is that when you start to look at the food we produce here, sugar is obviously in a silver spoon bag, and that is made from British sugar beet. But we have imported sugar cane, that is grown with neonics. And so we've got the problem where we're not allowed to use them, and yet sugar will sit on a shelf next to our sugar that the imported sugar is grown with them. And this is where we have this big problem that there isn't a level playing field.
Right. Now, the effects of not using neonicotinoids on our crops can be quite significant. We had a particularly bad year in 2020, if I remember rightly. What effects did not using neonicots have on the yields that year?
2020, which you've just mentioned, was a particularly bad year, but we weren't granted the use of them because the winter was a little bit more, if you like, on the cooler side, but it wasn't granted. But they flew early, the aphids flew early, they infected the crop massively. And nationally, in 2020, there was a yield reduction of 20%, but a lot of farmers had 40% yield reductions, but we have heard that some individual farmers had yield losses of 80%, which is just horrific, and so lost a lot of money that year. So that is the problem with it.
And what are the implications then of banning neonicotinoids completely?
It can impact on our food supply, like we've mentioned, the imports. We've also got to look at the alternatives, because banning them completely, we still will get aphids coming in carrying the virus. The alternative to using the treatment is an insecticide, an overall insecticide spray. Now, just going back a stage, the seed treatment just protects the plant. So all the creepy crawlies and all the beneficial insects that we want to keep are crawling all over the soil. They are unharmed. They're still living happily. When we spray to control these, because we have to spray when the plant is very small, we are controlling all the insects on the soil surface that we want to keep. It's a sort of a non-selective insecticide. Mm. So the problem we've got is we will be causing more damage rather than less.
Interesting. And we shall keep a weather eye on this, if you'll pardon the pun, and see what happens in the coming weeks. But it's certainly a concern for all beet farmers at the moment, isn't it?
Very much so, Steve. It's a big concern. There's lots going on in farming and food production at the minute, and all we're asked for is let us produce food profitably on a level playing field.
All right, Andrew, thanks once again for joining us on the programme.
Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Still to come on the farming programme this week, the livestock and grain markets review, the week for the weather to come, and we'll discuss soya. Is the level of imports for animal feed sustainable? What are the alternatives? Are there opportunities for UK farmers? That's next.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the farming programme with Steve Orchard.
We use too much soya in livestock diets, and too much of that is imported. So says the NCS project. That's Nitrogen Efficient Plants for Climate Smart Arable Cropping Systems. No wonder they shortened it to NCS. Is this true? A conference called Soya to Sustainability has been organised to discuss the soya alternatives, which will be of interest to UK farmers. John MacArthur is MD of MacArthur BDC, specialising in the design, construction and maintenance of grain storage and processing systems, and he's here to tell us more. John, first, tell us about the NCS project, which is behind Soya to Sustainability.
NCS project is a 5.9 million DEFRA-funded project that's run by Innovate UK. And I believe there's 18 partners. So it's a really vast project. And the focus of the project is reducing carbon emissions in agriculture. Specifically, the NCS project's focus is how we can use homegrown proteins, bioproteins, beans, peas, and other pulses such as lupins even, to replace fully or partially replace soybean meal in livestock rations.
So is the problem soybean or the fact that it's imported soya?
An awful lot of the issue is that it's imported soya. So the UK will import around about 2.4 million tons of soybean meal, and the overwhelming majority of which is going into animal feed. 70 to 75% of the UK soybean meal comes from South American origins, so Brazil, Argentina, and increasingly Paraguay. And this soy can very often be associated with land use change and potentially deforestation as well.
And a lot of food miles on there before it even gets to this country. So from soya to sustainability then is a conference being held later this month. And we'll get all the details in just a minute or two. But just give us a little flavour of what the conference is all about. Who's going to be speaking?
So we've got three fantastic panels. The first of which includes keynote speakers, one of which is Philip Limbury of Compassion and World Farming, and Gemma Hoskins of Mighty Earth. And they will be looking at the environmental challenges, but also the social challenges that soy and soybean meal production, the challenges that that presents. Then what we'll be moving on to is to look at the use of soybean meal in the UK livestock sector now. The surprising amount that actually could be done today based on existing knowledge in terms of reducing our reliance and our dependence on that soybean meal. And then from the livestock, we'll look at the arable side of the picture and what are the significant and surprisingly large benefits of increasing the acreage of pulses that are grown in the UK, particularly in terms of carbon and reduction in the use of synthetic fertilisers.
John, what's the purpose of the conference? What's it focusing on?
The focus of this conference, and it's really wants to, it's going to be the first conference in a series that follows as the project develops. And what we're really looking to do with this conference is really to start establishing a dialogue with everybody in the supply chain, from retailers and consumers right the way back through to producers and growers. And the aim of this first conference is just to make people aware in all these positions along that supply chain of what can be actually done now based on research that has been completed now. Replacing soybean meal isn't actually incredibly technically demanding or challenging task, but it's just a case of understanding what is out there. And then we'll also be able to guide the direction of research in the future as well in the project by kind of, you know, engaging with the project so people can have that input and become a stakeholder in the project.
Who's this aimed at in terms of the audience? Who should be going to this conference?
So really what we're looking to do is to bring along anybody who is part of this livestock product supply chain, anybody who's involved in the animal feed industry or in animal nutrition. We'll be covering both monogastric and ruminants through to farmers and growers, be they livestock, arable or mixed, to understand kind of like the potential kind of benefits that a reduction in the reliance on soy could actually have for British agriculture.
Okay. And just tell us then when, where, and where do we go for information and tickets?
The conference is going to be on Wednesday, the 22nd of January, and it's going to be held at the Kingsgate Conference Centre in Peterborough, which is a fantastic facility. Tickets can be booked online. So if you Google From Soya to Sustainability, or go to Eventbrite specifically and search From Soya to Sustainability, you will be able to buy your tickets from there.
John MacArthur, Managing Director of MacArthur BDC. Thank you for that. Hope you get loads of people at the conference. And thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thanks very much, Steve.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting as usual with livestock from Louth Market auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Starting off with the prime cattle this morning, with prime heifers all in averaging a fantastic 362.49 pence per kilo. Top price in the prime ring this week were F. Wallace and Son of Biscathorpe with a 600 kilo Limousin heifer at 360 pence, or £2,160. On to the OTMs and core cows. Top of the day was 194 pence per kilo, or £1,416.20 for R. Carlton and Sons of Hatton. On to the store cattle. Store steers this week averaged £1,110.50, and a small entry of heifers averaged £800. Topping the steers and the heifers this week were R. Paddison of Grainthorpe, with the steers topping at £1,400. For a 12-month-old Limousin, and heifers topped at £1,020 for a 12-month-old Limousin cross heifer. On to the sheep, an absolutely outstanding trade in the lambs, in the hogs this week, with an SQQ of 335.68 pence per kilo and an all-in average of 348.15 pence per kilo. Hogs this week, all-in average pounds per head at £168.14. Top spot in the hogs this week were the Tupplin family at Skegness, soaring to £244 for a super pen of 58 kilo Beltex crosses. They're on a 42 hogs, averaging eye-watering £222.26, or 415.91 pence per kilo. On to the cull ewes, an average of £159.39. H. Smith and Sons of Theddlethorpe topped at £230 for a fantastic pen of Beltex ewes. Mules topped at £188 for AJ Colson and Sons of Osgoodby. On to the store lambs, an average of £153.29. DA Barker and Sons of Hawthorpe topped at £165. That concludes this week's market report. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. And with a look at the grain markets, good morning and happy new year to Open Fields, Alice Killam.
Good morning, Steve. It's been a slow, meandering couple of days on the market, which is not really what the doctor ordered for the first proper week back. We wanted to build on some of the tiny momentum that had been gathered over Christmas, but instead we got a screen awash with red, a very familiar sight to the one that we've been witnessing over the last couple of months. We climbed just above the 190 mark on UK futures, and then we headed back down again just below it. In truth, and like everybody else, we are lacking demand. This is why the market appears so lacklustre. One of the reasons for the slow nature of the day on Thursday is the USDA data, which was released at 5 p.m. on Friday evening. The main talking point will revolve around the cheapest feed grain in the world, US corn. We know that it's cheap, and we also know that it's become less cheap in the last 6 weeks as their export programme has shifted some hefty numbers. I expected a lower ending stock to the year again. It seems odd that this will be the seventh month in a row where US ending stocks will drop, which is the longest streak in over 20 years. And still, the market won't move. There is still a sizable long that has been produced in the US, as well as the short that still exists on both sides of the Atlantic on the wheat. This is important to remember as funds still have an ability to swing markets in both directions. A side issue for us perhaps, while some of you will have been studying the performance of Steve Reed at the Oxford Conference, others may have been looking to our Chancellor. She is currently en route to China for a pre-planned trip, reports suggest. Wherever she might be, UK markets seem unimpressed with the borrowing costs surging in recent days. The knock-on effect from this, for us, will be a weakening pound. This will do no harm as the UK gets closer to actually exporting wheat from the West Country. The benefit will also be that the imported replacement of milling wheat, which the UK miller seems so keen to buy, becomes that much more expensive. I was hoping to bring you some more positive news as we started the new year, so let's hope for some more buoyancy next week. Guide prices circa Friday morning: feed wheat, January 175 to 185, March 180 to 190, May 185 to 195, with Group 1 milling premiums still holding at around £30, feed barley, January 150 to 160, May 155 to 165, and oilseed rape, February 425 to 435, and May 430 to 440. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Cold but dry under high pressure, keeping things a bit more settled this week. Very little wind to speak about all week, no rain, and daytime highs of 3 to 5 to start the week, up to 8 or 9 by Wednesday. Overnight's down to freezing tonight and 2 or 3 for the rest of the week. Now, before we go, there's a last chance to get tickets for the Lincolnshire Young Farmers Ball as they celebrate their 50 years. Kate Knight's here. A special year, Kate.
It is. So it's 50 years of the Federation of Lincolnshire Young Farmers. So there are clubs that are obviously older than 50 years. In fact, Alford celebrated its 80th year this year, and so did Rugby. But 50 years marks the collaboration of all of the Lincolnshire clubs into the Federation. So we're having a big celebratory year. And one of the big things that we are doing this year, coming in February, is our 50th year anniversary ball.
Excellent. Tell us about that then.
It's at the Epic Centre. You know, we always have a county ball. We've obviously changed the date to fit in with the 50th year, and also mixed it and changed it up a little bit to honour the celebrating the 50 years. And a great team of YFC members, led by our county president, Richard Butler, have been working and planning the ball for some months now. It's not too late to buy tickets. It's got an ABBA tribute band and a YFC DJ, a three-course meal, a singer, champagne reception for past chairman and presidents, and just trying to encourage anyone that's been involved in the Federation and Lincolnshire Young Farmers to come along and celebrate with us.
Brilliant. And the date for that again was
15th of February, and that's at the Epic Centre at the fabulous Lincolnshire Showground. And I think ticket sales close this weekend around, so it's certainly not too late to book tickets if anybody wants. All the information's on all our normal socials and websites.
And a nice way to celebrate Valentine's weekend.
Yeah, it might have a little bit of a romantic twist to it as well. You never know. It is young farmers after all.
I'm sure. All right, Kate, thanks for joining us on the programme again.
Thank you.
So next week I'm at Lammer. If you're going, drop me a message on X at Farming Show or email steve.orchard@hitsradio.co.uk. I'll get the coffees in and report back next Sunday. We'll also talk farm safety as the stats don't look good again and see what this Adopt Fund is all about. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.